whether you are self-employed, or as some of you, self-unemployed, or the rest of you are working, each one of these principles will work for you. I don't think, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to have to give it to you straight between the eyes, I do not think that you can come to a mastery of money or a mastery of life if you are not working for yourself. I'm sorry. You can be self-employed within a corporation and sell their products, but you are master of when and how you do it. Okay, there are certain corporations and certain chosen careers where self-employment is almost impossible. I'll give you an example. If you want to be a hydroelectric power station manager, you can't really have an hydroelectric power station of your own. Well, it's not that you can't, but it's unusual. You know? There are certain things that, you know, if you want to be a bomber pilot, there aren't very many subcontracting bomber companies. So you have to go work for the government. But basically speaking, in a generalization, if you would forgive me a generalization, you cannot come to a mastery unless you work for yourself. And the reason this is so is that if you're working for somebody else, by the very fact that you're working for somebody else, you have to be a part of their consciousness. Now, you can create a freedom inside of that, especially if you have a boss or you're in one of those nice relationships where the guy you work for is almost like your partner. You know, you've got a very close, warm relationship, and he's giving you freedom, you're giving him freedom, or she is and you are, whatever the relationship is. But basically speaking, I would ask you to consider working for yourself. It is more metaphysically scary, but it actually gives you more freedom, because you then get into a position where you absolutely control your life. Now, I do not want you throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not saying walk in tomorrow and quit the job that you're in. But what I'm saying is that within the job, you may look at developing creativities that are beyond the job. You know? So to the point where the sidelines become stronger than the job. And in the end, the sideline is what you go to when you leave the job. Okay? Understanding that leaving people is not saying we don't like you. It's just leaving them. You know? It's not rejection. It's just saying, I feel I have a stronger path over here. I know a guy who called Mitch, who I've talked about in my seminars. Mitch has followed my seminars around for some time, because he's a brilliant example of a person who made something out of a hobby or a side craft. And what Mitch was interested in, Mitch was none too bright. In fact, Mitch was like a stick of two planks. And if old Mitch had 40 IQ under both armpits, that was a lot. But there was one thing that Mitch adored. His life's dream was military uniforms. Okay, I think I've talked about Mitch before, but for the benefit of others, let me just very quickly tell you the story of Mitch. Mitch liked military uniforms, and he knew everything there was ever to know about military uniforms. And he would watch movies, and he would write to the movie companies, and he'd say to them, did you know that when that tank came up over the horizon, the guy standing in the tank behind the 99th tree right in the distance 7 miles away had his badge on his hat upside down? And in fact, on top of that, he was a Panzer tank captain and he had a Polish Air Force hat. So these film companies would write back to Mitch and say, dear Mr. Mitch, you know, thank you very much for letting us know that we made a mistake. Obviously, we can't rectify because we've made the film, but, you know, we'll try harder next time. Well, bit by bit, what happened was that Mitch kept writing to these film companies, and he would give them minute chapter and verse about every single boot, strap, and lapel, and marking, and you know, and if it was 1942, and a plane took off that didn't come off the production line until 43, Mitch would know that. You know, and he'd write them, he'd say, in that film, you've got guys flying a plane that didn't exist in 42, you know? Anyway, he drove them so buggy, it got to the point that when they started making the films, they'd write to him, they'd say, dear Mr. Mitch, would you mind coming in and making sure that this thing's all kosher and everybody's got their act on straight? So bit by bit, Mitch got a lot of money consulting for the companies, and he reinvested the money in buying more and more military uniforms. And he bought tanks and armored cars and 1935 BMWs and just stuff that you need for a regular old war film, you know? Mitch became a millionaire in his 20s. Just out of one little thing that was his hobby, military uniforms. Now, to me, military uniforms is like, you know? I mean, I could give a damn, but to Mitch, it was the lifeblood of his whole existence. Within what you're doing, there's that military uniform in there somewhere for you. Where you can be living, you can be working for somebody, and you can have something else going that can actually give you more money. But let's just, before we go into the left brain, right brain thing, let us look here a little bit at expectancy, okay? It is the human condition to expect little or nothing. And we are given a piece of garbage that is called Please Expect Nothing, because you're not honorable enough to get it. Okay? They tell you the meek will inherit the earth. Okay? They'll tell you that poverty is honorable. And the reason it developed, especially in our Judeo-Christian society, was because it was a philosophy of the Christian church. Okay? It was their particular philosophy. They said that poverty was neat. Okay? Whether the peasants agreed or not didn't matter. They said that poverty was neat and that God loved the poor people more than he loved the creators. Okay? He loved the poor people. So if you were poor, you were in line for more love of God, right? If you were rich, you were going to get less love of God, okay? The life force is impartial. It doesn't know if you're rich or poor. It hasn't got a clue. It does not know whether you're rich or poor. But they said that it did. And so what happened was this, that as they began to deal with people's belief patterns, people would come along and they would say, "Oi, why are we so poor? You know, how come God is not giving us a fair whack at a cake? You know, where's my share of the gatto?" And not having a decent answer for the people, the hierarchies would say to them, "Well, don't worry, if you haven't got it now, you will get yours in heaven." Okay? You will get yours in heaven, and God especially loves you because you're poor. Now, what do you tell an ego if you want to control it? You tell it that it's loved. You want to get a whole bunch of people to do something, you tell them you love them. "I love you. Will you go down and put 20 cents in the parking meter for me?" "Yes, of course I will." You know? God will love you if you stay poor. So the people thought, "Oh, well, we're just these poor people and we'll be happy being poor." And each person in this room has been sold that thought form. And you sucked it up and you lapped it up and you thought, "This is neat. God's going to love me if I stay poor." Now let me ask you if you still believe that. Any objections? None at all? Okay, do you see how that was a little piece of manipulation? Because they could not give to the peasants the kind of wealth that the churches had, you had to understand that the churches were, and still are, the largest real estate holding companies in the world. Only governments have more real estate than churches. The church, and especially the Christian church, owns more of the planet Earth than anybody else. Okay, and they teach poverty. That's handy. And it wasn't hard for the peasantry to notice that the church was incredibly rich. You know, because the monks were sort of fat and happy and they looked well off. And so that is how it came about. And so this business about God loves you if you stay little, if you stay poor, if you toe the line, if you support the village, if you support the army, if you support his lordship, if you dig in the vines, if you bring in the wine as you stomp on the grape, God will love you. If you plow the fields, God loves you. And if you haven't got it now, you'll get yours in heaven. Anybody in this room waiting to go to heaven? Fantastic. You need it now. If you do not develop strength now, you will not have strength after you die. You move after you die to the exact dimension that you were in before you died. If you are expecting a band of angels with trumpets coming down going, "Hallelujah, Chris finally made it. Peter, sit at the right hand here on this little cloud and let us mumble Hebrew to you." If you think that is what's going to happen, you are just not very metaphysically sophisticated. It is a fact that when you die, you move into the dimension that you're in your state of consciousness. And you have the opportunity on the physical plane, on the earth plane right now, to so increase your consciousness that when you die, you can come into a crescendo of energy. And you can create the crescendo of energy here. Here. So we're looking at understanding that, first of all, poverty is not beautiful. It does not empower you. To come to a mastery of the physical plane, you have to master money. That means you have to have some to master it. Okay? You have to have money. And if you cannot go up to somebody and say, "This costs 60 bucks, you're dead in the water. You're dead in the water. Because you need it. and you do not honor yourself by forgetting to charge people. I'm going to ask you from today onwards, for the next 1 year, is do nothing for anybody ever without charging them for a year. Then when you have learned the lesson of how to charge them, then you can come from, I'll do it for nothing. But you have spent a great part of your life doing things for people for nothing. Why? Because the ego wanted acceptance. And once you understand that you're not worried about acceptance, you don't have to do it for nothing. And if you can't do it for a year, do it for a week. Somebody says, give me a ride to the station. You say, $5. They argue, $10. And they say, what do you mean $10? You always give me a lift to the station. You say, yeah, but I'm learning about myself this week, $10. Where you come out of not feeling embarrassed when a person says, how much do I owe you? When you do something for somebody, you transfer your love and your caring and you honor them by doing it for them. Whether you sell them a washing machine or you give them a ride to the station or whatever you do, okay? When you do that and you transfer of yourself, you are perfectly entitled to have them transfer back of themselves. And you are perfectly entitled as a human being to decide what of themselves you want. Because you have free will. So you could accept a bag of carrots, you could accept them making love to you, you could accept them giving you a loaf of bread, or you could say, $60. You're entitled to get it. And it's honorable for you to get it, and you honor yourself by doing it. And most of you, or some of you perhaps, have come out of a weakness of feeling it wasn't honorable. Being poor is having reality manipulate you. Today we are looking at you stepping to a consciousness where you dominate reality. The world you live in, not being solid, is a manifestation or thought form that reflects the inner you. When you look, you walk out on the street and you see scenes, when you see things, when you experience people talking to you, when you receive letters and communications, when you look at something, you are looking at a reflection of the inner you. If you want to know how well you are doing metaphysically, you look at your life. I don't mean in financial terms necessarily, but you look at your life. Do you have it mastered? Is your body in control? Do you have people around you for entertainment, for friendship, for fun? If you don't, is that your choice? If it isn't, let's look at that. Let us look at whether we have flowers or desert. Let us look at whether we have freedom or stagnation. Let us look whether we have manipulation or empowerment. And if you want to look at how you're doing, you understand that what you're looking at is a reflection of you. So the way that you run your life, look within, is basically when the masters said, and they all said it, Buddha, the Nazarene, Lao Tzu, Zoroaster, look within. Look within is basically look without, see the symbols, and gain information about the inner you. If you look without and you see poverty, okay, then you can understand that the inner you is poor. That it does not have all that it needs. But in there, that inner you is desert. And if you die, you would move into a spirit world or a spirit dimension that looked like a desert, that did not have a lot of life force. Because that is the reality that you live in, okay? Now, wealth is not necessarily hard cash. Wealth is experiences, people, events, feelings, magnanimousness, beauty. That's wealth, creativity, freedom, love. All of those things are a part of wealth. But money, you cannot detract life from money. And we are taught to do that because nobody wanted us getting too rich. And they wanted to basically keep us poor. Once we understand that you have to expect to receive, then you begin to expect. I've written up there, expecting to receive is to honor yourself. To honor yourself is to love God or love the life force, because you are the life force. Okay. As you understand that you have a right to receive, then you put those feelings out in the universal law and you will get back whatever you ask for. You will get back whatever you put in there, you will get it back, depending on the strength and the power that you can create. Okay? You'll get it back. But the fact is that we very rarely ask, because we feel it's not okay to ask, don't we? And it's dumb. It's totally dumb. It's absolutely dumb. It's going into a whole ego trip, but like poverty in a Western society, not Ethiopian poverty, but like poverty in Australia is an ego trip. And do you see why it is? Because it's the ego saying, I am too holy, too religious, and too beyond it all to get involved in doing anything creative and unanalytic. Fine, if you're not interested in money, you're running an ego trip. I'm not saying that you have to become messianically involved in chasing cash, but I'm saying you have to be interested in it because it is the life force of the physical plane. It's like saying, I'm not interested in breathing. I won't bother to breathe. Please let me yawn and lung. I can't be bothered to breathe. I've got much too much ego to breathe. Would you mind creating a $340,000 iron lung for me to sit in? And what happens in a socialist society like yours is that people can get away with that. You see, metaphysically in the forest, if you don't want to breathe, you die. If you don't want to run, you die. Metaphysically, they don't scoop up the weak and honor them. And in our country, especially in Australia, and in America, and in Britain, and so on, they honor the weak. If you open the newspaper is all about the weak. This morning, I was leaving Manly near Sydney, and I was looking at the Manly daily paper, and the headline was, The Sad Story of the Fear of the Elderly. And it had a little caption. It said, The Sad Story of the Elderly. And I thought, I wonder what kind of sad story in Manly they have that they don't have anywhere else. So I pick it up. I take a look. And it's all about how the elderly are scared. And the elderly are living on no money, and they're scared to be in Manly, and how sad it all is, you know? And I look at that. And they are selling that to somebody. They're selling, please be scared, please be frightened about being in Manly, and when you get to 65, you're only going to have $100 a week, okay? And it was this story about these elderly people who are living in the dark. They didn't have electricity because they didn't want to spend any money on electricity, you know? Like as if living in the dark would be the end of the world, you know? Every animal in the world lives in the dark, pretty much, except domestic animals. You know, the elephant doesn't go, oh my God, it's nighttime. I mean, if the worst comes to worst, you can live in the dark, it'd be easy, you know? But they make it into this incredible, horrendous thing where these people are, oh God. And when you understand that they sell you that garbage, why? Because the ego wants you to sympathize with it. Why are they selling you? Why are they manipulating your emotions to feel bad about these elderly people? Because they want you, then the ego says, please, poor me. I'm so honest and I've tried so hard and I've worked all my little life. Please. Please have sympathy. And also, while you're having sympathy, please mail me another check. Right? Or please go to your prime minister and just say, this is filthy and revolting that these people are living there, da, 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 and let's give them more money. And whose money do they give to the weak? Yours. The strong. They penalize the strong and say, we will go and we'll find these people and we'll give it to them instead. If you are concerned about the condition of the people, then you strengthen yourself and you go to the people. And you say, here I am, I'm strong. Watch me, do what I do and you'll become stronger. But to tax the rich people, or to tax the creators, and then go and undermine or underwrite the weak ones, allows you to drop everybody down. Okay? So I'm going to ask you now, to decide that you are absolutely categorically going to step into money. To step into whatever money you're earning now, to step into an understanding that when people transfer their money to you, they're honoring you, and you're honoring them by accepting it. It's so simple. It's only hard when through consciousness we do not have belief patterns that open us to it. The mind begins to record at birth or slightly before, as some researchers would say. And as it begins to record, every thought and feeling is there, every subliminal feeling, every subliminal thought, okay, all of it is permeating the mind and nothing is lost. And all of the stuff that you were taught when you went through early childhood and then you went to school and through puberty, all of it, almost all of it, was designed to keep you safe and to control you. So you were taught look left, look right, at the crossroads, that kind of stuff. You were taught, you know, hygiene, you were taught those kinds of things, okay? But you are mostly taught things that would control you. And they subliminally put into your mind, leave school and join the system. Sign up for the plan. Put in for the superannuation payments. Agree to be a part of Medicare. Agree to be a part of our society. Join the tribe. Come here. Train to be in the army. Come here. Be a part of our church. They trained you to join. And we are looking today to training ourselves to undo him. Because it is impossible, it's impossible to become free with that thought form. You have to step out, create your own thought form, and then go back and take whatever they have that's good and dump the garbage. Okay. As we look at that, we begin to see that the mind records all this information, okay? The subconscious mind starts taking up these thought forms, and when you think about it, your brain or your mind is receiving information as trillions and trillions of pieces of information per second. Okay? Not just everything that's going on physically in your body, but the emotions that you're having, the emotion of the man or woman sitting next to you, your intellect, your thought forms, the banging of the hammer in the room next door, the heat, the subliminal feelings, you might be leaning against a wall there, and there might be a guy on the other wall leaning against his wall, and you're feeling his feelings. You're picking up subliminal information, you're reading the newspaper, you're watching the TV, you're listening to the radio, and you're taking on the psyche and the mindset of it all. Okay, the brain has been discovered by Pender that basically speaking, if you're right-handed, you will have an intellectual dominance in the left brain. Okay, the brain is in two halves, joined in the center, but it's basically, for those of you that have not looked at your brain recently, right out. Two halves, it looks like a sort of the inside of a walnut. Okay, the left brain is where the intellect and those kind of analytical processes that you do reside. And so if I ask you to multiply 2 times 4 times 7, okay, to do it, you would engage the left brain. And you'd go, 2, 9. Okay. That's where the intellect resides, and it is also where the personality or the ego resides. Okay? In the right brain, we have found that in here is intuition and creativity. So, for example, if you're an artist, you're more than likely right brain, or most predominantly right brain. Okay, if you're an architect and you have to draw a wall that's 9 feet by 2 feet and 6 inches high and 3/4 of a whatnot deep, left brain. Okay, in the right brain, we found that that is the part where there is this creativity or a feeling of being a part of all things. There's a wholeness in the right brain. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying intellect is bad and intuition is good, or left brain is bad or right brain is good. I'm just showing you where these things reside. The ego resides in the left brain. And the ego is basically the opposite to the living spirit, because the ego feels itself separate to all things. Okay? It's that part of you that says, my name is, and I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm separate to everything else. Okay? It is the part of you that believes that you are not a part of all things, but that you're a separate person. The right brain is the holistic part of you, where you intuit, where you intuit that you are part of all things. Where you intuit that you, what you are basically is the life force or the living spirit. Okay? Then we begin to look at some of the functions that exist in these two sides, okay? And here we have manipulation, which is a factor of ego, which is a factor of fear, and opposite of that would be empowerment. And empowerment, ladies and gentlemen, is self-empowerment, but it's also being able to understand that loving people, truly loving them, is the ability to let them go. Is the ability to let them go and be as stupid as they want to be. I do not care if you want to go and stuff heroin up your nose, go do it. I honor your decision. I don't care if you want to fling yourself off this cliff, I honor your decision. I don't care if you want to get a job manipulating people, go do it, but I don't want to be a part of it. Empowerment is not manipulating yourself and then allowing that same grace to the others. Then from here we look at manipulation after manipulation. Manipulation, when you think about it, okay, is you saying, I do not control my destiny without bringing in negative emotion. So I'll manipulate you by telling you obligation or sin or guilt, or I'll scare you, okay, into doing what I want you to do, okay? Or I'll threaten you physically. You know, I'll say, do this, oh, manipulation. From manipulation, we then go on to restriction, and we understand that restriction is beautiful because it allows us spiritual growth. The opposite of restriction is freedom. And freedom, when you say to people freedom, they think of freedom fighters, Che Guevara, that kind of freedom. Freedom is at any given moment in your life, you are free to do whatever you want. If right at this moment you cannot walk out of this room and go to the airport and go to Mongolia for the rest of your life, if you choose, you're not free. You're not free. If you can't do that. And when you can do it, you may choose not to. But the fact is that that is freedom. And anything less than all of that is not freedom. And the mind and the ego will kid you into thinking that you're free. Because the ego does not want you becoming too much of that, the living spirit. It does not want you to become too much of the life force, because what will happen is you'll become less of the ego. And you'll feel, the more you become a part of the life force, you'll feel the death of the ego, or the undoing of it. As you accept and open to a metaphysical abundance of spirituality within you, the ego will get frightened and will feel that it's dying. And it'll actually pull you back and give you imbalance and sickness just to control you. Just to make sure that you're not going to be getting too far out ahead of yourself. Yes, sir?
Is it possible to feel frightened and yet not yet frightened? Would that explain that you're accepting and you're not worried about the fear?
Say that again.
Is it possible to be frightened for things and yet not frightened within? You say, well, fine, I'm frightened. Your body feels frightened, but your on the other feels, well, it's okay, you can be frightened if you like.
Okay. You can be frightened in your emotions, and your intellect or the inner you can say, I accept that I'm frightened, but I also accept that I'm not the fright. I'm not fear. I understand that the fright is coming from my ego, and it is totally irrational. Okay? Because isn't it true that 99.999% of the time when you worry about something, it doesn't happen? You know? I mean, you're all here. You know? What happened? Nothing. You made it. You've got it. You're fine. You know? I mean, it's like, yes. Yes, you see, the ego will rattle the cage. And the battle is, basically...
You're stepping out of it,
yeah. Yeah, you're stepping out of it. You're saying, I'm not this. I'm not the disease in my body. I'm not the imbalance in my life. I'm not these emotions. I'm a divine energy beyond. You see, the inner you cannot be sick at all. Not possible. The inner you cannot be poor. The inner you cannot be lonely. The inner you cannot be scared. The inner you cannot be anything other than whole and a part of all things. The more you align with that infinity within you, the more you're becoming. So when you get limitation, when ego serves you fear, when ego serves you less than best, you align and you say, I don't accept that energy. I am whole. I'm empowered. I'm free. I'm love. I'm the living spirit. I have creativity, fulfillment, positivity, infinity, satisfaction, health, beauty, and respect for all living things. That is what I am. The fact that my ego thinks that these feet padding down the street behind me is a phantom rapist in Melbourne is a mere aberration of the ego. Well, how many times have you walked along at night and you've heard these feet go tum, 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 and you know you're going to be attacked? I mean, you just know that any minute now the guy's going to rip your clothes off and rob you, da-da-da-da, you know? And he doesn't. And he didn't. And he was walking along thinking you were going to turn and rob him. You know? This gorilla wrestler walking up the street looking at this little girl going home and saying, if she turns around and hits me, I'll be so scared. Okay, then let us look here, okay? Fear... It's basically the opposite of fear is love. And love, in an energy life force sense, is not emotion. Okay, it is not an emotion. Love as an emotion is the way that humans express it. Because we express love from a lowly position, so to speak, from a place of not really understanding it. Okay? At its very littlest level, love is an emotion. God loves you. Send 10 bucks to the church because God loves you. And the great teacher is going to love you and save you and then love you some more, depending on how much you send. Love, in the real sense of the word, is this inner light, the life force in all things. It is the non-restricted, non-manipulative, non-judgmental, non-critical life force in all things. Okay, that is true love. How spiritual you can become in life is a factor of how magnanimous you can become. How magnanimous. That is the measure of your spiritual growth. And your magnanimousness is basically the amount of this life force that you can express. A person who feels that they are not in control of their life cannot be magnanimous. Okay? Because they feel that there is limited supply. That there is not enough to go around. That if they do well, somebody else is going to do less well. Okay? And the media sells you that one all of the time. That like if somebody got a pay increase, that meant that somebody else would be getting a decrease. That if you did well somehow, some way, in some mythical form that they never explained to you, some poor bastard would starve. You know, and they sell you that idea. They said it to you in the paper. The unions give you that all the time. They give you this. If you do well, there's only a limited supply, so somebody else is going to be not doing well. And that is not the case. Because if you become very powerful and you express a lot of life force and you've got a lot of energy going for you, you actually create and empower other people. You know, other people learn from you and they become your assistants and they help you and they get involved and they become strong and they go do it and so on. So it's by being strong, you strengthen the others. Okay, so moving on down, the fear then, fear is everything from like guilt to straight out fear to feeling that there's not enough, to feeling that there's not, that you won't have what you want in life, to feeling not loved, to feeling confused. All of those parts, okay, are the antithesis to this life form. Let me ask you, for those of you that weren't there the other day, let me ask you to see if you can feel the life force that's exuding from your own body, okay? Put your hands together like this, okay? Far enough apart so that you're not affected by the heat. Just slightly closer. Yeah, that's it, great man. Okay, now put your feelings in the gap between your hands. Like, feel what that feels like. Now very slowly, open your hands out. Still about a foot. Yeah, that's excellent. Okay, now just hold it for a moment. Now very slowly push your hands back and see if you can feel the resistance. Stop at about 3 inches because you don't want to get so close that you can feel the heat. Put your hands back. Your hands should be coming back now, quite close. Your hands should be coming back to about 3 inches, okay? Now, as you open your hands back out again, feel if you can feel or detect a slight change, okay? Almost like your hands are being forced out. And then stop, and then bring your hands back in, concentrating on this gap between your hands. Okay, bring them in close, like bring them in sort of 3 inches. Okay, all right, put your hands down. Did you feel it? Did some of you feel it? Now, some of you didn't feel it, okay? But some of you felt it, okay? If you're a lot left brain intellect, it'll be hard for you to feel it. If you've sort of developed right-hand intuition, you'll feel it, okay? Did you feel the resistance and the change there? Okay. What are you feeling? You're feeling, basically, this invisible life force that is exuding from every molecule of your being. It is exuding backwards, downwards, upwards, sideways. It is going out. You're walking in this bubble of energy. Okay, and that bubble of energy reflects your feelings. Okay, it reflects your moods, your attitudes, and it reflects the mindset that you have. Remembering that you took on a mindset when you were a small baby, and then you put that mindset into practice, and you express the mindset to the universal law just impartially reflects back to you whatever exactly you are. Okay, whatever you feel, it reflects back to you exactly. You put in your order to the universal law, and you get an exact result back to you. You know, we talked the other night. Please send me a total flannel for Osborne, okay? This wimpy rag, so I can toss him around and bat him about and smack him about for 40 years. And Universal Law says, when? Thursday or Saturday? You say Saturday, because that's when I'm going dancing. So you arrive at the dance hall, and then this idiot forgets to put his handbrake on in his car. The car slides backwards. It scratches the side of your Toyota. You have to change names and addresses. You fall in love, marry, and stay poor for 40 years. All right? Universal Law, send me some really neat and interesting exotic sickness so everybody in my family will gather around me and I'll get attention and I'll be loved and they'll help me and they'll nurture me and look after me because I'm totally sick. Universal Law, I am far too important to get involved in money, so please send me what kind of varieties of poverty have you got, you know? You got special poverty, discount poverty, poverty at half price for people that are not used to it. What have you got? Trainee poverty, you know? What kind of poverty have you got? And Universal Law says to you, well, what kind of poverty would you like, you know? And then you put in your order and it gives it back to you. Exactly, exactly, exactly. Okay, so then when you understand that, this life force is basically your seat of power. Inside this bubble, okay, is all of you. And all of you is transmitting into the universal law and what you receive back is a reflection of that transmission. Okay? So here we are today. We're using these subliminal techniques. We're telling your mind something different because you do not have or did not have control of what you got. You know, a small child can't get up out of the crib and say, listen, you idiots, you arguing about the rent here is affecting my life. Because in 40 years' time, every time I get to the 29th of the month, my blood pressure's going to go up 3 spots. Because I'll feel insecure about making it through the physical plane. You bums. Give me another Farley's Rust. It doesn't do that. It just sucks it up. I mean, it's like this thing in a forest. It's like a little kitten in a forest. It doesn't have a chance to agree or disagree. Then what happened was you went out into the physical plane and you put out your order. And your order came from the mindset that you accepted. And then you got back reality. A couple of days, a week, a month, a year later, you got back physical reality. You got back acceptance, money, lack of. You got back accident, safety. You got back fear. You got back love. You got back whatever you got back. And then you said, you see, life's hard. You see, life's difficult. You see, there's a limited supply. You see, and you see. I mean, isn't it at the pitch? And then the garbagey kind of life that we live, we say that's all there is. And it's true, for a person like that, that is all there is, because that's what they live. This is the only possibility for you, is this struggling, this sacrifice, and this totally bland lifestyle. But within that, there's always the spark. The key's always there, and that divinity within you, knocking at your consciousness, saying, no, it isn't. That isn't all that there is. You can come out of excellence, you can come out of love, you can study and learn, you can develop yourself, you can find something that people want, and you can sell it to them, and you can get out of this spiral. And that's what I'm asking you to do today. No more shilly-shally. No more maybe manana, perhaps, you know, when it all comes together. When the economy gets stronger, when the interest rates go down, when people start buying beer again. Whenever that is. Now, setting up within yourself this power of granting and honoring yourself freedom, playing the fake it till you make it philosophy, where you set up the energy now. Okay, then you will look at the outside and you'll see that it's not all there yet. Okay, but it is in a gradual state of becoming, and if you reflect the fake it till you make it energy long enough, you make it. Most people tend to fake it till you make it for about the first 35 seconds. Until something goes wrong, and then they stop playing fake until you make it. I'm going to ask you today to look at what you want to do in your life, look at your purposes and goals, and I'm going to ask you to set up a power inside of you that says you have it already.